Hey guys, this is Hunter Levine, and thank you for listening to the Captain's Collective podcast. Brought to you by Skinny Water Culture, Hell's Bay Boatworks, and Orvis Fly Fishing. Georgia's known for its iconic red dirt roads, farming, fried food, and genuine southern culture. There are a lot of things that come to mind when people think about this incredible place, but fishing isn't often one of them. However, in today's episode with Andy Bowen of Cahutta Fishing Company, we are reminded of some of the great opportunities that Georgia has. From bass ponds to mountain streams to chasing reds near Savannah's marsh, Georgia is not something to be overlooked. Andy and I had the opportunity to spend some time at his home base of Blue Ridge, Georgia, where he showed me their operation at Cahutta, which offers local guided trips, travel opportunities around the world, and a great shop to get you all the gear you need to enjoy whatever water you find yourself on. In this episode, Andy and I discuss his childhood chasing bass and farm ponds, how he made the jump of starting his own outfitter far in his adult career, and the importance of listening and managing others' expectations. Andy also shares a story-turned nightmare of a GT that got away, and we even had some time to slip down to some local trout water. I learned a lot, and I truthfully had my eyes open to some of the great opportunities Andy's home state offers. I hope that you enjoy. Thank you for listening. This is the Captain's Collective.
He's out there. All right,
I'll say it's anything you choose, I think it picks you. You know, it's genetic.
Let everything else stop in the world and just be quiet, and it's amazing where your mind goes at that point, and where it doesn't go. And sometimes just that quiet space is what we need, and especially in this day and age.
If you have a fly rod in your hand, it's this tool that takes you to beautiful places. You meet hopefully wonderful people, and it's just this cherry on top of this outdoor adventure.
When the fish is coming, that shot within a shot, that timer starts. Beep, 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 beep,
beep. No one else knew anything anyway, and you just might definitely making it up as you're going along. But
so what Grandpa and Dad would tell me is like, all right, where's the old big trout laying out there? Where's his shaving cream on the water? Where's he been shaving this morning at? So look for his shaving cream on the water, and that's where he's going to be.
All right. Well, hey, Andy, thanks for hanging out with us and joining us on the podcast. I'm looking forward to spending the day with you and getting on the water. But before we get into all of that and hearing about what you guys are doing here in Georgia, I'd love just to first hear about how you got into owning a fly shop and running guides and doing trips. I'd like to hear about the origin of all that.
Yeah, man, for sure. Thanks for having me. it really goes back years ago. When I was a kid, I grew up fishing, grew up in South Georgia. My mom fished, my dad fished, my sister, everybody in my family fished. Basically, the pond fishing, Flint River, was a big part of my life back in the day. And my dad was a farmer, so we grew up, in that environment of hunting and fishing and farming and what have you. So that's kind of my roots as far as how I got into the sport. Beyond that, just over the years, man, I've always done it. I've always enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity about 11 years ago to start a fly shop, and it's something I've always considered doing and wanted to do and had interest in. So we opened up in Cartersville, Georgia 11 years ago, and had that shop for 11 years, been here in Blue Ridge for two now, and that's kind of the story. I mean, mm-hmm. as far as how it all, came about.
When did you first decide that you wanted to have a fly shop?
Well, it's I had another business going for a while, and once I sold that business, I decided that I wanted to do something in the outdoor industry. Mm-hmm. And I've always had this in mind, but life kind of took me down a different path, mm-hmm. for so long, and did some different things in the golf course business, built golf courses, worked in the turf management world for a while.
Oh, interesting.
And I did that, but fortunately, a lot of the golf courses I worked at had some pretty nice ponds on it as well, so I was always trying to sneak off and fish as much as possible.
Now I know if I have any problems with my yard to start sending you photos and saying, hey, man, what do I need to do
with this? It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a while, Hunter. I'm a little rusty on the turf stuff, but I'll do my best to help you out.
Yeah. So, I mean, at what point, how old were you when you first started Cahutta?
11 years ago. I'm 53 now. So,
okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty, I mean, you're in your 40s. I mean, that's a jump. That's a leap to go into something new. What was that like at that time?
Well, you know, it's basically kind of how things worked out was I had a distribution company selling products, you know, to organic fertilizers, what have you, to golf courses, sod farms, soccer fields, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had that for 11 years, and when I sold that to one of my sales reps, I kept a few accounts, and I, so I was a little bit more, had a lot more, a little bit more free time.
Yeah.
So I wasn't actually running the business at that point. It was more or less doing more with, you know, going and seeing clients and what have you, being kind of finished my day a little earlier. So I was always on the water a lot more. I found that I had a pretty good, a lot more free time for that. At that point, I decided I was working with a buddy of mine, looking to do some guided trips with him.
Mm-hmm.
I went and got my captain's license. I wanted to go ahead and get that done to have my captain's license. So I went to sea school, did the whole thing, got my captain's license. And almost simultaneously as I was going to start working with this guy, my buddy, he his opportunity for it. We had a shop in town that closed, and that was kind of a green light for me to open up a shop. So I didn't really use my captain's license like I had planned initially, as much as I'd planned. I still maintain my captain's license, but, you know, again, I go by Andy Bowen, not Captain Andy Bowen. There's a lot of captains out there that do a good job and do this every day on the water and have a lot of respect for those guys. So I don't try to come across as I'm like, you know, big captain guy or whatever, but I have a lot of respect for what those guys do on a daily basis and the jobs they do on the water. So but anyway, that's kind of, you know, how I got going.
So for you, was there ever a desire to do farming and continue that, or was that kind of something that you
not really. I think what kind of led me down that road with turf management was that I spent my whole life outdoors, through farming, fishing, hunting, you know, and that type thing. So it was kind of a natural fit to kind of, because I had kind of an agronomy or, you know, agricultural background, to move into that was, you know, a little bit easier thing for me to do. I wasn't like a golf pro per se. I was more into trenches, you know, irrigation, working on things and kind of managing the grounds, you know, the golf courses. So anyway, but yeah, so that's kind of.
Do you feel like there were certain things about growing up in that environment, kind of on farms, outdoors, with a dad who worked the land, that has benefited you in running a shop and running a guiding business?
100%. You know, the biggest thing is work ethic. You know, I grew up working, you know, working hard, you know, working with my dad on the farm and so forth. And as you get older, you start really realizing, you know, the things that that you were taught as a child, how much it really impacts your life as you get older. You know, for me, you know, I was very fortunate and had two wonderful parents that, you know, that cared about me, loved me, and taught me the right things to do in life and how to treat people and you know, how to just carry yourself as a person. And those are lifelong lessons, man. And, you know, not everybody gets that. So, yeah, 100%. I'd say just how to treat people and work ethic is the biggest two take-home, you know, messages I got from my parents, you know, so.
Yeah, and now you have the opportunity to be a part of overseeing several guides who are interacting with people, taking people out on the water. What do you try to teach them about how to treat people? What's important to you from a business standpoint and from a guiding standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first and foremost, I mean, one of the things that we tell everyone, whether they're employees in the shop or guides that work with us at Cajuta, is just treat people the way you want to be treated. You know, be sincere, no BS, you know, just be a real person. You know, and I also stress the fact that when our guides have clients on the water, they're kind of their caretakers for the day. You know, and it goes beyond just catching fish sometimes. They got to make sure those folks are, you know, are healthy, and they take care of them for the day. It may sound kind of goofy, but it's also when you're wading around in streams and doing different, whether you're in a boat or on a stream, just, you got to be careful, you know, and make sure that, you know, the safety aspect is in place, and beyond all the things you got to do to help, teach them to catch fish or help them catch fish, you know, with that part of it. So that's one part of it. And the other thing is, as far as in the shop, is we've always stressed that, you know, we don't judge people. You know, it's one of those things. It's like when people walk in the shop, man, you know, it's everybody's a person, and it doesn't matter what, how they're dressed or what they're wearing or what have you, man. It's like we're here to help them. We're here to help them get into the sport, educate them on the proper ways to get started, and hopefully, you know, build a relationship with those customers, you know. And that's one thing that I've really, truly enjoyed about this business, is not just meeting people, but building relationships. You know, we've got clients that we've had for over 11 years, and they're like friends now. You know, they go on these travel trips with us. They do a lot of different things, and obviously, well, they're guide service as well. So I really enjoy that aspect of taking someone that's never seen a fly rod, never really, but always have been kind of intrigued by the sport, and then watch them grow and be able to come back in. They're showing us pictures on their iPhone about all the, these fish they've caught or the experiences they've had, and it's pretty gratifying.
Yeah, why do you think that has historically been such an issue with fly shops? And you even shared with me a story where somebody was kind of being judgy or looking down on you or something, you know, because you were from Georgia and you weren't from one of the big, you know, this guy's not from one of the big trout epicenters of the world in that person's eyes.
Right.
Why do you think that's such an issue?
I don't really know, man. I really don't. It's, you know, it's fishing. You know, at the end of the day, we're fishing, and it's, I've been fortunate to be able to travel and go to a lot of cool places and go to a lot of different destinations and what have you. And I'm very observant, you know. I try to be observant of what's going on around me, and when you go into a shop, you know, I've unfortunately had some experiences where you may go into a shop and someone, there's an employee over there tying a fly or whatever, and just too busy to talk to you for whatever reason, or act like you're not in the store. I've always taken the approach that that's the last thing we'll be. We want to greet people, want to be friendly. Want to, again, be sincere, be real, be authentic in how we go about doing our business. And all that, to me, is just the way it needs to be. You know, it's not we're not building rockets. It's, we're fishing. You know, it's this is supposed to be a fun sport.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, too, for people that hasn't really got into this sport, it can be intimidating. You know, they walk into a fly shop and see all these furs and feathers and materials on the wall and rods and all this gear, and they're like, why do you need all this stuff to catch fish? And it's really, I think that having the approach that we've always taken is we try to kind of break things down to a very, you know, easy way to kind of get into the sport and not get too tied up with a lot of the depth of the sport you can get into. You can go as far into entomology as you want to go. But you can also have fun and get started and get kind of get your feet wet, so to speak, and without diving in too deep, you know, and grow with the sport and learn as you go.
Yeah, and I've never understood why somebody doesn't like being around people who, in their eyes, aren't as good of fishermen as them and wants to be a guide. It's like you realize your job as a guide is to take people out who aren't as good as you, hopefully, at least in that particular species or area. So it's like you're setting yourself up for a bruising of a career, because it's like that's like being a teacher and not liking kids or something.
Exactly. Or, you know? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, tell me, so, you know, let's talk about Georgia, because I don't think very many people think of Georgia as a fly fishing state. It's just not on most people's radar. But we were talking about this earlier in the shop. You guys have a lot of cool stuff that you do offer as a state. Just kind of give me the rundown of why fish and do outdoor things in Georgia.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I think you're right. I mean, unfortunately, you are right in that regard, but I think more and more people are realizing what we do, what the state of Georgia has to offer. You know, between the mountains, you know, a lot of things is like a lot of people come to me and they'll say, well, I don't really fly fish, but I bass fish. Like, I bass fish as well. You know, I love bass fishing. I grew up in South Georgia bass fishing. But I've made bass fish with a fly rod versus a conventional bait cast or spinner rod. But, you know, it's, you know, the cool thing about Georgia to me is it's so diverse. I mean, you've got the mountains, you've got, you know, it's like South Georgia, the Flint River, the Chattahoochee that flows through, down through South Georgia. And you've got so many opportunities between, you know, bass, you know, shoal bass, white bass, striped bass, hybrid bass, largemouth, obviously. And then you've got trout in the mountains. And then on the coast, we've got a great coast. You've got, you know, tarpon fishing, red fishing, just a good diverse area within 5 to 6 miles, apart, you know. So you could literally be, like this past weekend, my daughter was out for fall break and we were at Cape Sandblast.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go down, take my wife and daughter, and we fish a little bit. It's mm-hmm. kind of more of a family trip. Spent more time kind of on the beach, just enjoying being outside. But, mm-hmm. You know, 6 hours, I'm at Cape Sandblast. So it's so many different, you know, it's so diverse in that way. And that's what I enjoy about it. I mean, I love going to different destinations and fishing for different species. I really enjoy the travel aspect, and it's not even just going like to these like international kind of locations. It's more, I enjoy, just locally fishing areas I've never fished. I mean, we've got a great fishery in the Southeast, you know, mm-hmm. including, you know, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, are great places to fish, and they're all close. I mean, here in Blue Ridge, we, you know, within an hour, we can be on Nantahala River in North mm-hmm. Carolina. We can do that. But there's a lot of things that this corner of Georgia offers that I enjoy about Blue Ridge, Georgia, especially. And even beyond fly fishing, it's just a cool area, man. We've got, you know, plenty of just, you got whitewater rafting, you got fly fishing, mountain biking, hiking mm-hmm. trails. It's just a really cool spot. And it's close enough to the salt, because I do love saltwater fishing mm-hmm. a lot. I really enjoy that as well. And it gives you that kind of, we have a lot of clients that are from Florida, you know, that come up to Blue Ridge. And we're always sharing stories. They're telling me snook and redfish and tarpon mm-hmm. and permit stories. And I'm telling them trout stories. And they love coming up here for trout. And I'm thinking, how soon can I get down and go tarpon fishing? So it's just a good mix of everything in North Georgia.
Yeah, and you talked to me about how one of the things that you love about owning a shop is developing up these communities of people who like to fish, and then actually organizing beyond just your own backyard about different trips. Could you talk to me about how that fits into what you guys do here at Cutta?
As far as organizing destination travel?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, we do it for lots of reasons. One, we enjoy the adventure of going somewhere different and fishing. And the way we do it, we always hire local guides in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Louisiana, we hire Louisiana guides for our redfish in mm-hmm. Louisiana trip that we've got coming up November 7th this year. Wherever we're going, we hire the local guides for those areas. I basically, myself or one of my guides or my manager at the shop will be the host of the trip. So we get a group of people together, preferably nice people that like mm-hmm. that enjoy traveling and are easy to get along with.
Mm-hmm.
And we just take them to these destinations, and we basically line up all the travel plans, airlines, what have you. And you know, we're not a Yellow Dog Travel kind of company. Mm-hmm. You know, we do this to kind of help add a service as a fly shop. Because, frankly, you can talk with someone over the counter in a store till you're blue in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get on a boat with someone and fish with them, you truly start building those relationships. You know, mm-hmm. and people start really seeing how all this works, and they get really into it. So we enjoy that side of it, and, like, really try to give some variety. Like, Baja, Mexico is one of our places that we mm-hmm. go and have been for five years. Would have been 6 years this year. COVID kind of messed our plans up on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But have plans to go back to Baja next year. And that's one of our kind of what I would call one of our flagship trips. It's been a really good destination for us. And, you know, frankly, it also helps us with business. I mean, mm-hmm. the business side of it, you know, in Baja, we, you know, typically are fishing like intermediate lines, 10 weights and 9 and 10 weights. Some of our, you know, clients may or may not have those rods. They may need rods. Sometimes mm-hmm. they buy them from us. Sometimes they buy them elsewhere. But they do need gear for that trip. So that helps us in some sales for retail and get them equipped and ready to go and have the proper equipment to fish with. But beyond that, it's just really a good relationship building process mm-hmm. through travel, in my opinion anyway.
you said, you know, you can talk to people till they're blue in the face in the shop, but then when you get on the boat, something's different. What do you feel like is different about that?
Well, you just kind of connect, you know, you know, if you're, let's say you're, in a situation where you're red fishing or tarpon fishing, where you're sight fishing, you're kind of taking turns on the bow.
Mm-hmm.
That's an opportunity to really build your client up and like give them some kind of be a cheerleader, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, and really kind of help them through that depending on their experience level. So you get to kind of help them, but in a way that is really relaxed and mm-hmm. In an environment that's relaxed. It's relaxed until you see a string of tarpon come, and then everything changes in a hurry.
Or if you mess it up.
Or how many shots you're going to get before I get an opportunity on the bow. But but the other side of it is, it's just, I don't know, it's, you know, the whole thing with travel and even fishing, I mean, even locally, you know, is like the process, you know. You get up in the morning, wherever you are in the world, to fish, and you're excited to go. You're mm-hmm. looking forward to getting out there. You got to have all your gear together. You got to have all your leaders built and everything, you know, ready to roll. And just that aspect of the unknown, like what's going to happen today. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I live for. I love just that, just the drive to go somewhere, or a flight going to a destination, of just thinking about what it may be like. I try not to ever have expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I find that you don't have to manage expectations if you don't have expectations. Go with a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. Go in it with the attitude of, you know, excitement and looking forward to being out there. And you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days, you're going to have weather days that's going to blow you off the water,
mm-hmm.
or whatever may happen. But it's all about making the best of each day.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you got, whatever you're dealt that day, is just make the best of it.
Well, we were supposed to fish together last week down in my area, and it was like, kind of came down to it, and it was just like not gonna happen. And
right.
How do you help? I mean, let's talk about managing expectations, because whether you're fishing with kids or you're fishing with a client, you know, saltwater, freshwater, running a guide operation, whatever, expectation management is very important with having a good time. I mean, what are some tips that you could give on that?
Well, you know, one thing that we do is, like, in the shop, we try to gather as much information as we can when we first get that phone call. We mm-hmm. have a lot of people that call the shop to book trips. We have a lot of walk-in clients as well. We really try to be thorough with the conversation mm-hmm. in the beginning. You know,
what does that look like? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, one question obviously is, have you ever fly fished before?
In my backyard all the time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So in, you know, grass with no wind. And
yeah.
I mean.
So, you know, you ask a lot of questions and you listen. I think the biggest thing in life is to listen to what people, don't just mm-hmm. talk, just listen to what people have to say. And if, you know, try to find out what their experience level is to some degree, let them know what kind of expectations, you know, they should basically kind of help them manage their expectations. It's like, hey, tomorrow, you know, we had some rain last night type thing. We got some conditions here. We think we're still going to be successful, but it may be a little bit challenging. You know, just be upfront with people. If it's at a point where it's not fishable, we're going to tell them that as well. It's mm-hmm. like, it's not worth going, just like you and I made that call.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not worth getting out there. So we always are upfront with everyone in that way, you know, in terms of that. And if it's kids involved, you know, we love taking kids fishing. Our guides mm-hmm. are awesome. I'll brag on my guides. They do a really, really good job. Garner's been with me for 10 years. He's been with me for 11 years. He does an excellent job. So does, you know, I mean, Drew and all of them, Matt mm-hmm. and Cole and all the guys that's working with me now do a really good job. And, you know, they're good with kids. They're good mm-hmm. with, and that's what I tell people in the shop too. It's like, the cool thing about fly fishing, it doesn't matter how old you are, young mm-hmm. or old. If you're, you know, 10 or 70, you can start fly fishing, mm-hmm. you know? And that's, I guess when our guides go out with people, that's the first thing they try to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to tell our guys on that end, is like, really try to kind of figure out who you're dealing with, mm-hmm. what kind of guides, you know, what are these people looking to do? I mean, what do they really want to do mm-hmm. that day? Not just catch fish, but some people go fishing for different reasons. Maybe they got a big trip. They're going out to Jackson Hole or Missoula or wherever out west, and they've never been on a drift boat before. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an opportunity locally. If you're in the Atlanta, Birmingham, Nashville, any area of Chattanooga in this area around Blue Ridge, to come here, give them an opportunity to get kind of, again, get their feet wet, like be out and kind of hone in some skills before they go. Maybe they'll be more successful when they hit like the South Fork or whatever when they get out west. But just as an example, mm-hmm. obviously there's a lot of great waters out west, but and there's a lot of great waters here, you know, as well. But that's really kind of what we do, just ask a lot of questions and try to get a feel for what they do. If we deal with someone that's maybe has more like, say, saltwater experience, because again, we do get a lot of folks from Florida this way, mm-hmm. And they like streamer fishing, or they know what that's about and how to you know, really streamer fish, that may be something we key in on and say, okay, you know, this guy's a little bit more experienced, or this lady's a little bit more experienced, mm-hmm. we want to take them to do something a little different than we yeah. maybe would do with someone that has no experience. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that answered the question, but that's kind of...
No, that I think that's a lot of people's challenges, you know. Even myself, like I took my daughter out. We were up here in Rising Fawn, Georgia, mm-hmm. and we were doing a lot of bass fishing out of a little boat by the little cabin. We were staying on a cabin on 130 acres, and they had cows and four-wheelers, and we were having fun. And I'd just take her out for like an hour in a little John boat on a little farm pond.
Yeah.
Probably not much different than what you grew up fishing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, I want to say every other cast I'm dealing with a tangle, you know, of some sort. She's pretty bad at the weight of the lure whipping around the rod tip, you know, and I'm like trying to coach her on that, but it's tough in the moment, you know.
Sure.
We caught a couple fish actually, but, you know, expectations, she's getting frustrated. So then I just, with her, I just, hey, let's just head back in, you
right,
know?
Right.
But yeah, I think that's that's a really challenging part of what you do is managing that. And when people put a lot of money on the line and there's been thousands of dollars, you know, it can be hard to have a weather day or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely can. You know, most folks that we deal with, you know, I would say 95% of people we deal with, maybe even 98%, or really good people, you know, they're very understanding. They want to learn, you know, there's a reason why they're paying for it, and it's because they want to get in the sport. We just try to give them the best experience we possibly can, you know, mm-hmm. within that time frame that they book, you know, with us. And but yeah, talking about like farm pond fishing, you know, like I said earlier, I've been very, very fortunate to go to a lot of cool places and fish, but just the roots of going back to getting in a John boat and throwing mm-hmm. bass poppers, you know, for big bluegill or bass, man, I can't think of anything I'm probably happier doing.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that kind of, I don't know, it just kind of takes you back to where it all began. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
And it's simple.
I love doing it. It's a lot of fun. And it's a great way to teach mm-hmm. kids too, because you're not dealing with a lot of times with flowing water or mending lines or, you know, proper presentation per se. You know, it's a little bit more forgiving when you're on still water in
yeah.
a pond, and you can...
No trees. Well, sometimes there's trees,
sometimes
but a lot of
trees,
times you can get away from trees,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, for sure.
That was my problem when I was a kid. That's why I didn't fly fish as a kid. I did it a couple times, and I was just... It was all Tennessee fly fishing.
Right.
And I was just living in the trees.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
just... That
yeah.
was... I couldn't handle it, so I just got into smallmouth fishing with little plugs,
right.
you know, instead. But yeah,
oh, yeah. No, it can be frustrating, obviously, you know, when there's
yeah.
trees around and fly fishing in trees.
I'll be in them today.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's okay.
You don't really outgrow that one if you're like me. But so when I walked in the store, we were talking about travel trips, and I thought one of the things I didn't expect to see in a fly shop in Georgia was a rooster fish. Tell me the story behind catching this gigantic rooster fish.
Well, you know, the particular fish you're speaking of, excuse me, I didn't catch that fish. I caught a nice fish last year on this trip. 2 days later, my client, Wes Brock, caught this enormous rooster fish. I wasn't in the boat with him the day it happened. It was just absolutely, I didn't even realize they got that big. I knew they got big, but I mean, it's just like a 70-pound rooster fish.
Yeah.
And all the guys were so excited for him on the trip that we all chipped in and did a replica mount for him, and that's why it's in the shop now. I told him the deal was we were going to pay for it, and we would keep it in the shop for 1 year. He could have it back. 1 year came, the 1 year anniversary came up on that, and I asked him, he said, I don't have anywhere to put it in my house or anywhere in my office to put it, so just if you got a place, put it, just, you know, use it in the shop. So
you ever have someone come in and say, can you take me catch one of these out here?
Yeah.
What people, is this stream monster here?
Yeah, people ask, are those in the Toccoa? I was like, nah, man. Nah.
Can you imagine, though?
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
People will be coming in. They might take Georgia a little more serious fly fishing-wise.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, and that's the thing, again, talking about Georgia, man. I mean, I'm obviously a native Georgian, grew up in South Georgia, and I've traveled. I live in North Carolina for about a seven-year stint. But, you know, between the striper fisheries and the reservoirs and the rivers that we've got and the coast and the trout and the mountains, man, it's just such a diverse place and just a great place to fly fish. And, you know, that's one thing in our other store that we had over in Cartersville for a while is that we kind of pioneered the drift boat fishing, fly fishing for striper out of a drift boat. You know, I'm sure there's other people out there, and if someone listens to the podcast, they may, you know, challenge me on that. But I know in our area, there was no one doing it, to my knowledge. And that just kind of brought a whole new aspect to what we could offer as a guide service. Because, you know, when you get in a drift boat, you're typically getting in a drift boat with a 5-6 or maybe a 7-weight streamer rod or what have you. But to get in a drift boat with 9 and 10 weights geared up for, 15-20-pound fish, and they're not all obviously 15-20 pounds, but they obviously can be, and we've caught the fish that size or bigger. But you know, we also catch a lot of 5 and 7 pound fish as well. So I don't want to oversell something and whatever. Yeah. But you know, it's
manage expectations.
Managing those expectations. But it's a super cool thing to do. You know, targeting, you know, different kind of structure, log jams, riffles, run, shoals, and what have you. And getting tight on a striped bass and moving current, you know, that's really cool.
Y'all using like streamers or?
Streamers, bait fish patterns, you know, like in the Etowah, basically, you know, thread fin and gid or shed are primary forage fish, you know, forage there. So that's more of a streamer type scenario. But again, the popper and smaller streamer, fishing is really good because, you know, you've got really good. We got a great spotted bass fishery as well. So those are a lot of fun to catch, you know. And actually the fall striper, for our striper season, kind of is more of a summer fishery for us, more of a late spring and through the summer. You can still catch them in the fall, but it kind of tails out a little bit in the fall. And but the fall is a great time to get out with, you know, some topwater poppers, and it's a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, what do you feel like's key in catching striped bass in the fall out here? What's the most important thing to?
Well, you know, it kind of depends. If you're, you know, we primarily focus on rivers. That's where we are in terms of striper fishing. There's obviously reservoirs in the area that people focus on striper fishing. That scenario, you know, you're going to be looking, you know, actually. You know, the successful guys that do that are looking for birds working. They're also on reservoirs. Looking for humps, the different places that that the fish will, you know, push bait in certain areas. And using your graph, you know, sometimes sinking lines, you know, that type of scenario where you need to kind of get down to the fish if they're not surfacing or pushing bait on top. But as far as river fishing, you know, it's more of a, it's more of a search mission, you know, kind of thing. It's not like you really, you can sight fish at times. That's not very common, but you can, you know, drift up on fish. You see fish, you can, you can present a fly properly, swing it down to them, and you can get a take. But most of the time you're basically fishing to structure that, you know, looks fishy, you know, looks like fish should be there. And that could be log jams. It could be shoals. We have a lot of Indian fish traps on the Etowah, dated back 2,000 years ago. It's a really cool river with all the you know, fish weirs and so forth that travel basically through Georgia and into Alabama on the cold Coosa River Basin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, if it's good with you, I'd love to transition into some rapid fire questions.
Sure.
And kind of think about some of that. So for you, if you could only do one style of fishing in Georgia, what would it be?
You know, that's a hard question for me because I love it all. That's the mm-hmm. that's probably one of my weaknesses is that I love fishing for everything. Mm-hmm. So I think I may be okay with a lot, maybe not extremely good at one yeah, thing because yeah. I love to do it all. But I really enjoy streamer fishing. It's action packed. You're casting a lot. You're kind of as you're floating down rivers. You're looking at your next presentation where your fly needs to land. Just the take typically on that is pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that style of fishing. And obviously, you know, top water, everybody loves dry fly fishing. You know,
oh, yeah.
You're a fly fisherman, you love the dry fly. But anything on top is awesome as well. But I really enjoy streamer fishing.
So out of all the places that you've traveled, what's your favorite destination to take people to?
I would probably have to say there's two destinations. It's kind of hard to pick one. Baja is its own kind of animal within itself. It's just a cool place and wild and cool and just a really, really cool place to go. People enjoy that just from the environment they're in. You know, we're on the beach on Sea of Cortez. It's a gorgeous place to hang out. The way we do the trip's awesome because we have these two Mexican ladies that cook for us. They're at just unbelievable food that we eat. One of my clients was with me a couple years ago, and he's like, man, I got to tell you, you did a really poor job on this trip. What's one thing you were not very good at? And I was like, what is that? He says, you didn't let us know how good the food was going to be. It's sushi, sashimi, and, you know, just great food. And just the whole experience, man, is really cool. And also, I know this is a big change between Baja, but I love taking people red fishing, whether it be anywhere, whether it be on the Georgia coast, whether it be in Louisiana, Charleston, wherever we go. There's so many good places in Florida, South Carolina, Louisiana, obviously is, you know, kind of has gotten a lot of press on the redfish in the last several, you know, few years or many years. Mm-hmm. But the thing about the redfish trip I really enjoy is that it's easy for us. We drive typically. I have some clients that fly in, like this year, I got two guys from Texas coming in. And we pick them up in New Orleans. Drive down towards Venice, and we fish that area. Not say we fish Venice always, just again, depending on conditions. We may fish different areas around Venice, north, west, east, whatever. But it's just one cool environment to be in the marsh. I love the marsh, and sight fishing is obviously great. It's a lot of fun to watch clients, you know, knees start kind of knocking when they see a 25-pound, 30-pound bull redfish, you know, and they're trying to lay a fly on their nose, and it's just a cool experience, man. And if you do things, you know, I don't want to oversell this because I think people have done this in the past. We're like, oh, redfish, you know, they're easy, you know, whatever. I don't think so. I mean, they will eat, you know, if you get a fly around them. But it also depends upon like where you're fishing and how pressured that particular, you know, fishery, you know, is in terms of the location. So I think it's not a fair statement to say that redfish are easy in any way, but I enjoy the redfish trips a lot.
Last weekend, I was in Tampa Bay fly fishing for redfish. It was unbelievably challenging. Yep. They were very spooky, very skittish, and, of course, insanely pressured and very challenging. Beautiful, cool fishery, but very challenging. Speaking of challenges, what's been the most challenging fish for you to chase with all of your travel adventures?
Well, I guess it would have to be giant trevally. I got an opportunity 3 years ago to go to the Seychelles, and a trip of a lifetime for me. I may not ever get an opportunity to go back. Mm-hmm. I sure hope there's a way I can do that and host that potentially one day. But I had a fish that really hurt my feelings there, and I wake up with cold sweats at 2 in the morning over this one still. It was a I was casting his 12 weight rod, big popper, over the top of these coral heads, and I had a just an absolute Volkswagen come out of the water and eat my popper and got me into the coral so fast I had no chance of trying to stop it. And we're fishing 130-pound Suffolk straight to the fly, and it damn near pulled me out of the boat. And that one, it happened so fast, and I'd already been on the bow for probably 30 minutes casting this 12 weight, you know, and working this big popper. So I was already getting a little bit fatigued, and then when that all happened and went down, it seemed like it happened so fast, and it did happen so fast, but it wrapped me so quick and was off before I could. I mean, I'm just basically trying to hold the line back. Typically, you know, tarpon or other species you catch, you know, once you get a good hook set, you're trying to feed the line back to your reel properly without any catastrophe going on and get back onto your reel. Whereas in that situation, you don't want to give them anything. And I just absolutely couldn't hold the fish back. And after about 45 minutes of just shaking, I couldn't contain myself. I turned and looked at Alec. Alec Gerbert was our guide that day. He was the head guide at Alphonse at the time. And I asked him, I said, "Alec, how big was that fish?" He goes, "Oh, that one's at least 90 pounds. Wow. So, again, you know, that one was a tough one, kind of a heartbreaker. You know, you think about it. And but it's fishing. You know, it's kind of part of the deal. I think about that one a lot.
What do you feel like is the biggest challenge for fly shops right now, or just bait and tackle shops in general?
Yeah, well, you know, the obviously one challenge is online shopping. You know, that's everybody.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
everybody knows that. But it's, you know, I think there's still a place. There's definitely a place for fly shops, and that's why it's so important to try to do a good job. You know, one, you know, be knowledgeable, have a knowledgeable staff that knows how to rig. You know, here at Cajada, if you're going brook trout fishing, we know how to rig. We know what flies you need for that. If you're going tarpon fishing, we can set up a tarpon reel for you with the proper knots and so forth, and get a line that's appropriate for what you're going to be doing. So although we're in the mountains, you know, we fish for a lot of different fish, different species, and we travel quite a bit. So it gives us a little bit, a lot more diversity even as a shop, because we don't only trout fish. We do trout fish quite a bit, obviously, because it's our backyard. But I think having a knowledgeable staff, friendly staff, again, you know, no BS, be sincere. You know, you have to do those things because I realize as a fly shop owner, people can buy stuff anywhere. It really depends on where they want to buy it. And I would like to think that they would like to support someone like our shop and other good shops in Georgia as well that are good people, that do a good job, you know, that live it every day. It's not a part-time gig for me. You know, we do this all the time. We do it every day, 7 days a week. And, you know, it's being passionate about what you do. You know, you can't teach passion. You either have it or you don't. Again, to brag on my guys in the shop and our guides, fishing guides, if they're not guiding, they're trying to figure out where they're going to go fish next or where they're going hunting or whatever it may be. They live every day for it. You know, again, when you're speaking with someone that you've never met, you either have passion or you don't, and people can read that. And my guys are genuine. You know, we work hard at being authentic in the way we do things. We don't try to, you know, ride people's coattails, so to speak. We don't look at what other people are doing. You know, we try to do our thing. We always have been that way. And we take pride in that because, you know, we want to be different. We want to be unique. And that's kind of, I think, if I had to hang my hat on one thing, it'd be customer service and providing a good positive experience when people come in the shop that makes them kind of indirectly want to support you and they want you to be around, you know? So that's the approach we take. And so far, so good. It's worked for us pretty well. So,
So as somebody who works a lot with gear, purchasing gear, et cetera, more than most of the guides that I sit down with, what advice do you have based off of your insight in all of that? Can you give people?
in terms of what gear to pick out for certain
things?
Yeah,
how to pick out gear, maybe what to focus on, what's really important. Just any type of insight as somebody who handles a lot more than the average person.
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, ask questions, you know. Let's say we're having a conversation about waders. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to fish 2 times a year or 200 times a year. May decide what wader you need, what quality wader you may need, or mm-hmm. what price point you may be willing to spend. Same way with rods and reels, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it comes down to quality. If you're going to be in certain situations where you know you're definitely going to need that, you know, seal drag system or what have you for whatever type of saltwater, you know, application you're using it for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it really just kind of, what I try to do is educate the customer, ask the questions of what they are they new at the sport, or just trying to get into it, or they're looking to upgrade to something different. There's a lot of good gear on the market. I mean, there's a lot of good manufacturers make a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, you know, for us, and that's a challenge for me as a fly shop owner, is trying to decide what to carry, you know, what do we want to have in the store. Because there is so many good options out there these days. It really comes down to just kind of trying to figure out what fits your model, you know, as far as your business model and what you're looking to do with your store.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously looking at numbers and past, you know, historical data, sales data, like what's working, what's not working, and try to make as good of decisions as you can possibly mm-hmm. make. If someone has retail 100% entirely figured out, I'd love to have a conversation with them. It's a challenging thing to do, but you just do your best. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we are kind of rolling the dice a bit about what next year holds, or, you know, obviously this year has been a little bit challenging with COVID, but the other side of that story is, and I like to focus on positives and not negatives. And mm-hmm. I think that one thing that COVID has done for the sport of fly fishing is it's really given a lot of people an opportunity just never really thought about fly fishing mm-hmm. or getting outdoors to really want to do this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a surge in it this past really late spring, early summer,
mm-hmm.
after kind of quarantine time was, you know, people were starting to get out a little bit more. They'd been kind of locked, you know, on lockdown for a while and with their businesses or work or what have you. And, you know, I think the outdoor industry as a whole, you know, has really seen a surge this past year, with whether it be paddling or mountain biking or fly fishing or whatever. I think it's really opened a lot of people's eyes to, you know, let's get outside
mm-hmm.
and do something fun, you know.
And that leads me to my next question. So can you give me the overview of the progression of how you would work with somebody? If I walked in your shop today, brand new, just during quarantine, watched River Runs Through It, and I'm ready to go, and you want to get me from day one in the shop to on one of these trips with you where I'm a great angler, all-around angler, what are the big kind of milestones or progressions that you're going to try to do?
Well, you know, basically just kind of, again, seeing exactly where you are, you know, what kind of gear do you have? What are your interests? Mm-hmm. And do you have interest in travel?
Let's say from blank slate, no gear, nothing. Like, how are you going to start me, and how are you going to, what are the little, what's the pipeline that you're going to move me through?
Yeah, for sure. So what I do is, and then what all my sales guys do as well, and the guys that work the shop, you know, we basically are here in our training with our staff. You know, the one thing we really focus on is we want to educate the consumer. We want mm-hmm. to educate that client, that customer in our shop, and it's their money. They can spend it as they wish, but we will take them through like a rod and reel setup. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like your combo package. You know, this mm-hmm. is your next step up, if you will, you know, and what kind of cost is associated. You know, I really focus a lot on people that are really serious about the sport. I talk about a combo, but really I'm real big as far as like investing in the sport. Like, if you're going to do this, if you spend a little bit more money on the front end, and it's not a sales pitch, it's really like, I've seen so many people trying to get into it, and they buy them $100, $200 combo, whatever, and 3 months later they're back in the shop saying, man, I wish I had spent my money on something a little bit nicer, a little bit, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's great. The combos are great to get people in the sport, depending on their budget or what they want to do. But the other side of it is there's a sense of like, hey, I'm vested into this. You know, if I go to the next level, maybe you don't buy a $900 fly rod, but maybe if you're in that mid range $400 or $500 price point and get a nice setup, you're excited about the gear you bought. Mm-hmm. You don't think you bought just something, you know, less adequate to use. Mm-hmm. You're excited because you spend a little extra money and you're vested and you really are excited and fired up about doing it. So that same conversation takes place with boots, waders, mm-hmm. you know, bags, packs, you know, whatever it may be. If you want fanny pack, you want, you know, whatever, sling mm-hmm. pack, whatever fits you, you want vest, you know, whatever. Everybody's different. Everybody has their own way of kind of going about it. But, you know, once someone, if they're very new at it, and they the first thing we do, we offer on the water school. So the on the water school is that we basically book that as a guide trip. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So it's like, if it's you and a buddy per se, you know, let's say, then it would be you two guys or you and your wife or whatever mm-hmm. with one of our instructors. And it's not a group of 12, 20 people, you know, at just getting a little bit of attention here or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not that that's a bad thing, but we feel like you get a lot better experience by, you know, having that one-on-one kind of thing mm-hmm. and get really value for your dollar with that. So that's how we do it. So that's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. Next level is book a guide trip, you know, book a guide trip with us. And then we offer casting, you know, casting lessons. If you want to get more advanced where you're casting, we're going to obviously start you out, you know, basic kind of, you know, basic casting as well as some techniques on the water, again, with trees mm-hmm. in our area, you know, some different ways to make casts, make presentations mm-hmm. without being in the trees every cast. You know, it's kind of a joke, but not a joke. You know, we tell clients, like, you know, if you can make these casts, we can fish today, or mm-hmm. you can stand and watch me tie knots all day. And mm-hmm. so we don't say that in a bad way. We just say it in a way of, like, put it things, again, in perspective yeah. of, like, you know, we can stay out of the trees and catch, you know, have opportunity to catch more fish, or, you know, you can sit here and watch me tie knots all day and go mm-hmm. through a million flies.
Yeah, well, it's, hey, if you want to get the most out of this, yeah. you got to put in this work. And I know a lot of tarpon guides who are like, man, you know, you're coming down for 4 days, you're going to fish with me, we're going to get shots, but, like, in the meantime, you have to work on your double haul. Because if you cannot double haul, we are going to have some problems.
Absolutely.
Because if we get a wind blow up, you know, and the south wind and everything's coming, then all of a sudden it's like, man, you've spent so much and you've invested so much, but you just didn't set yourself up. And there's a guide, unless you're going to have your guide cast for you, which I've never seen, you know,
no.
You know, then, yeah. So my last question is, so, you know, we walked in here and we're down in the basement area, which is super really cool area to hang out and talk. And you got this wall over here filled with photos of different trips and clients and just kind of what you guys have been able to do here at Cahutta over the years. If you could go back to that kid being raised by a farmer in Georgia, Jason Bass, what would you tell him?
Man, that's a tough question. I mean, it's just, you know, things progress with life. You don't really know what kind of path you're going to go down. You know, mm-hmm. you just got to, again, I think the one thing I was kind of blessed with in life, and I, you know, is that I'm a pretty good judge of character. I got good work ethic. I'm sincere. I try to do the right thing. And just being passionate about what you do. I mean, this mm-hmm. has been like a natural progression for me because I've done it most of my life. I've mm-hmm. I've had a rod in my hand since I was old enough to hold a rod that I can remember catching, you know, bluegill or shellcracker, you know, my dad mm-hmm. On crickets and you know, whatever. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. I think being observant and watch what's going on around you, you know, watch what other people are doing and what successes they have had or whatever, and just kind of, you know, for me, man, like, you go back to the people in this industry. Like Jose Wahibe mm-hmm. and Flip Pallet and Stu App and Lefty Cray, and I don't want to leave anybody out because there's a bunch of greats mm-hmm. out there, man. But, you know, I remember watching Walker K. Chronicles, you know, and that was one of the big impact in my life, you know, just the whole appreciation that Flip had for the environment and how mm-hmm. he told the stories. It was just one of the coolest things, and it really impacted me, man. Like, it was mm-hmm. one of those things that, like, I couldn't wait for Walker K. Chronicles to come on and watch that show, you know. And Spanish Fly, you know, I got an opportunity. I met Flip once in Atlanta show, you know, a few years ago, and don't really know him that well, mm-hmm. obviously, but have a lot of, you know, admiration for him, as mm-hmm. you know, for sure. But and I met Jose once at the Square Grouper down at Cudjoe Key. He's eating dinner one night, and he and I actually had a mutual friend that he had on his show once. That was a blues guitarist out of Savannah, and just a super cool experience to get to talk with Jose and meet him. Just a super nice guy, mm-hmm. and just those kind of people, man. It's like really paved the way for what the, you know, the youth, or I say youth, but like just the way where we are now with the fly fishing industry, how far it's come in such a short period of time. I know I listened to your podcast with Flip a while back, and I just remembered him saying about how things have changed, you know, with technology mm-hmm. and with GPS and things of that sort. And just beyond that, man, like the social media side of it, you know, mm-hmm. the Instagram, Facebook and things, you know, we obviously do it as well. You know, we have our followers, and we have our Instagram mm-hmm. account, and it's something you have to kind of do in this day and age. But I'm kind of old school that I'm not really, you know, most of my guys are helping me with all these, basically making the posts. They're not helping mm-hmm. me doing it. They're doing all this stuff. You mm-hmm. know, Jacob, my manager, does an excellent job with that stuff. And it's something you have to do, but I think it needs to be done in a proper way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like overnight success stories, you know, of some of these folks that are just haven't really paid their dues and haven't been in it very long. Yeah. It's I don't know. It's a tough topic, you know. It's a tough one, but because you know, you can't really complain or say anything about it when we're doing it as well. But you know, there are these like kind of Insta famous or Instagram. Yeah. You know, it's like overnight they're like, hey man, I got caught one nice fish, and now I'm like the guy you should book for, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. It is what it is. It's not going to go away. But that's kind of frustrating at times, you know, for me to see that, because I know how hard we work. I know we're not part-time at this. We do it every day. We work mm-hmm. hard at it. So, you know, what we do post, there's stuff that we're doing and experiences we're having with our clients that are real. And mm-hmm. it's like, you know, we're working hard at it. And I'm not trying to take away from anybody else by saying that. I'm just making a statement mm-hmm. that, you know, there's been a lot of things, I guess, part of that too, the whole hot spotting, you know, places and like, you know, this, there's a sense of like back when I was younger, I had an atlas and a, you know, I had an atlas, a gazetteer map, and mm-hmm. it was like figured out. You might drive 2 hours on a dirt road and mm-hmm. get to a spot and find out that place wasn't as special as you thought it was. But that was part of the experience. You know, you didn't have Google Maps to go study and go to these areas. And so it's kind of a catch-22. It's good and bad. You know, it's a mm-hmm. part of life. It is what it is. But anyway.
I have one more question, even though I have a tendency of never asking the actual last question. But I want to talk about really quick, man, Georgia food culture. I love food. I love cooking food. I love eating food. What do I need to know about food up here?
Well, you know, I'm a big foodie myself. Folks that know me can tell in the last couple of years I've gained a few pounds. But, no, the barbecue, obviously, you know, is high mm-hmm. on my list. You know, love barbecue. I've got a smoker myself. Mm-hmm. I bought a Rectech recently and mm-hmm. love that thing. It's absolutely awesome. But you know, locally, restaurant wise, you know, like in Blue Ridge, I mean, yeah. I'll give a shout out to a couple guys. I mean, it's a Black Sheep restaurant. It's an awesome place to have mm-hmm. a dinner. It's a really good place. Brandon does a great job with that place, and Patrick, they do a really good job. Misty Mountain Hops is a great spot in town. Chester Brunemeyer's, I really like that place a lot too. Great wings in there. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, outside of that, man, you know, like again, growing up in South Georgia, we had this, the Big Pig Jig is what it was called. And the Big Pig Jig started many years ago. And I don't know if you ever seen Myron Mixon on Pitmasters, but mm-hmm. He's from my area. I went to high school with he and his brother, Tracy. And just watching how he's grown that business, is that's what he does, you know, full time, is teach mm-hmm. people how to barbecue. And he's won all this, like Memphis in May, and won all these different competitions. And So, you know, my dad knew his dad, you know, when we grew growing up, and it was Jack's Old South Barbecue, and that's just a great, you know, that whole thing with barbecue and then how to competition style cooking and all.
Oh, yeah.
A big thing here in Georgia, but you know, and obviously seafood, man, I love seafood, so the Georgia coast is awesome for that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to leave that out, but yeah, I can't think of really anything else, you know, as far as on the food side of things, but you know, the other part of the food goes with beer. We have a lot of great breweries in the area.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of good local spots around. So, but yeah, so that's kind of, I can't think of
anything
else.
That's making me hungry, man.
I could eat right now for sure.
That's right. Well, hey, thanks for hanging out with us and talking about one. I love it up here. I think it's beautiful. And I think you guys have a really cool setup here. And I'm grateful for your time and your stories. And I hope to be on the trip. On the next GT.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So. I hope we can fish together soon. And, you know, then one last thing I'll say, too, is, you know, you mentioned the downstairs area. I mean, it's a cool spot. We also do our fly tying classes. We kind of put a halt mm-hmm. on that this year just due to COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when people come in, they're obviously welcome to come down and you know, check out the downstairs and all that good mm-hmm. stuff, too. And it's a good place for fly tying and after-hour, you know, meetings or events or yeah. what have you.
Yeah, this is a cool setup down here, and I got photos in the blog also. But thanks, man. Thanks for hanging out, and I look forward to getting on the water soon.
Likewise. Thank you, Hunter. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the Captain's Collective. Please help us out by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast. We hope that you enjoy. This is the Captain's Collective.